This is LOA Today, the Law of Attraction Show.
Truth, because I'm happy. Clap along if you know what happiness is to you.
Welcome to LOA Today. Walt Thiessen and Joel Elston here. It's Thursday, March 24th, 2016. And Joel, today we're going to be talking about adversity. And of course, there are a lot of things we can point to as we think about adversity. I want to start off with something a bit humorous, if that's okay with you. I want to make mention of a rather curious and humorous tweet that was put out there by Jeff Bezos, who you may know is the CEO of Amazon. Did you hear about that?
No, I have not, Walt.
Okay, well, he was reacting to a certain presidential candidate who we shall not name, and he was offering his suggestion on what we could do about that presidential candidate. His suggestion was we should send him out to outer space.
Wow.
So I just wanted to kind of jump on that one and take it a step further, because I don't really see why we should discriminate on that. I think we should take all the remaining candidates in both parties and send them to outer space. And in fact, let's make it a race. Whoever gets there first wins the presidency.
And by the time they get back, we'll be in really good shape, hopefully.
In fact, if it really works as well as I think it's going to work, we could send all of Congress there. I don't think anybody in the country would disagree with that. In fact, I doubt that anyone would actually notice they were missing.
I certainly would not.
I wouldn't. But I thought that was great. I saw that comment, and in the middle of a very nasty campaign, to see that kind of humor was terrific.
I love it. Did the candidate respond?
I haven't seen a response. It only came out a few days ago, and Trump usually takes some time to figure out exactly how he's going to be. Oh, I said the name. I'm sorry. I really didn't intend to do that.
Well, but if he's offended by it and he hears it, we'll just apologize.
Well, if he's offended by it, then it would be, you know, par for the course.
Absolutely.
But there is actually a tremendous example that Jeff Bezos gave us about how to turn adversity into an ally, how to turn a bad situation into a good situation. He did it through humor. And, of course, humor is one of our favorite, certainly one of my favorite ways to turn adversity around. But we wanted to do an entire show on how to turn around adversity and how people have actually done that in their lives. I mean, you're probably the first person we should start with, because your own life is an example of that.
Well, Walt, it seems to me that I am where I'm at because of adversity. I would not be in the position that I am if adversity did not happen. I don't want to imply that while the adversity was going on, I was jumping up and down and saying, yay, adversity, it's going to be great. But I will say that the events that happened to me led me to where I'm at today, that I never could have imagined having the life I have today without the adversity that had taken place. And a quick example of where, when I was working for my father in the insurance business, I truly hated the job. I have really severe ADHD. And the concept of sitting behind a desk, working with insurance and crunching numbers all day is truly my version of hell. And I was in it every day. Now, I was making reasonable money, and I drove a very nice car, which made me, at that age, very happy. But the work itself was miserable. Now, eventually, through my own fault, my father had to let me go. The day my dad fired me was one of the worst days of my life. Turns out, thank goodness that happened. It began a chain of events that propelled me to the career that I have today. And I would not have imagined that when I was sitting at my dad's office, as he said, I'm letting you go. That was a conversation I never anticipated of having.
It's also, for those who don't know Joel's story, it's also one of those journeys that I don't think you could have mapped that one out if you tried.
No, if we would have been in a position to say, okay, here's the chain of events that will happen to lead you to this, there's no way anybody could have imagined it. In fact, that day sitting in his office, when I truly had no idea what I was going to do, the adversity, and I was overwhelmed with the emotion of I wasn't prepared to do anything else, I sincerely, truly thought for a moment, or more than a moment, that I should just go ahead and kill myself. It was that bad. I just couldn't imagine what that next step would be. And after all of, after I picked myself up and it eventually led me to another career, through a slow chain of events, and I experienced quite a bit more adversity before I actually came out on the other side. But the entire chain of events was an amazing grouping of things, a grouping of a set of sort of a set of adversity circumstances, some very adverse circumstances that led me to understanding what I was put here on this planet to do. And once I got there, in retrospect, I could look back and see how everything happened for an exact reason. Or I made it happen for an exact reason. I don't know which one that is, but it didn't really matter because I was able to turn stuff that seemed like the worst days of my life into really climactic changing events that really propelled me forward. I've often told people what I used to identify as the five worst days of my life actually are the five most pivotal days of my life, and I no longer view them as quote-unquote bad or worst days.
And those bad or worst days, which you don't right. see as, are actually days that most people will consider to be horrific. I mean, you mentioned earlier, you know, the possibility of committing suicide. I would have thought that those particular days would have been suicidally
yes,
oriented.
Absolutely. And you know, I identify one of the circumstances, the day that I was arrested and put in jail. The moment that I was arrested for stealing money from a company due to my gambling addiction, I really saw no future at that point. I would not be able to work in any field, I didn't believe. I was not able to continue in my mind to be a productive human being because I was going to eventually be charged with a criminal act. That was a very bad day. Ironically, when I went into the jail cell the first evening and they shut the door, I had the exact opposite response that I thought I would have. And I don't know why. It went from where I should have been horrified. It was finally, this journey can come to an end. I no longer have to run. And it was at that moment that I actually saw a new beginning versus an ending. And that was and that was when I noticed that I was viewing the world a little differently. I was seeing things from a different perspective. Instead of this being a bad thing, this is an exceptional beginning. And I proceeded from that to build this, what I feel is an incredible life. And I did that starting that day is when the turns happened, the turn in my thinking happened. Most people would never view their first evening in jail as a new start. To me, it was amazing.
It's also something, well, you acknowledged it in your comment that you really don't know why you had that change. But I think it's an important point. The question is, why did you have that change? How could that possibly happen? How could you be in the worst place that you'd ever been, and all of a sudden you felt like everything was going to improve from that point onward? That's quite a thing, and it's something we all really need to learn.
Fortunately, I had been in recovery for a few months from my gambling addiction, and I had had some forward momentum in my life. I hadn't gambled at that point when I was arrested for about 3 months. So I did know that there...
Well, some might say that you had gambled. Instead of gambling in Las Vegas, you'd gambled with your life stealing
but
money.
This, I had, for the 3 months that I'm talking about, I hadn't been stealing.
I see.
When I had told my employer that I had been stealing from the company, I went into treatment the next day. And for that three-month period, I lived in a halfway house, and I was working. I wasn't gambling, and I wasn't stealing. And I was waiting for the outcome of every day I went to bed scared to death of what was going to happen. I knew there had to be some kind of conclusion to the fact that I'm the one that turned myself in, and I told them everything. So I wasn't hiding. I was just waiting. And when the moment came when I was arrested and taken to jail, I had dreaded that day so long. And one of the most interesting thoughts is when I woke up the following day in jail after the sort of the epiphany that this is a new start, I realized how sad things had gotten in my life when I woke up in jail, and it was not by far, it was not the worst place that I'd ever been. You really hope that jail is sort of the worst place you've ever been. And when I have lived, I've been homeless at that point. I've eaten out of trash cans out of that point. I've really been in some really rough situations. This was a very clean, almost a hospital type clean jail. It was very, very well maintained. I never felt in danger, and every night of my life I was in danger during my addictive period. So I really had that awakening that I had gone to a bottom, and I'm certainly on my way up now. And that's what it felt like. And I, along the way, I would have setbacks, and what I thought were setbacks in my life that eventually turned into the next step. A quick example of that is after about 3 years in recovery, I'd been working at the halfway house that I went and treatment center that I went to, and I had finished my probation. I had paid back every penny of the money that I had taken during that 3 year period. I was off probation, and I was looking forward to moving on and getting a higher paying job and really becoming what I thought I wanted to be at that point. I was at that time I was doing gambling and addiction counseling, and I knew I wanted to get into some type of sales where I could make a lot of money. That was my goal. So I had saved up. I had to pay off restitution of a little over $10,000 plus a $1,500 fine. And that, while that didn't sound like a huge amount of money, when you were waiting tables and working odd jobs and doing that's very substantial. So I had no money left when I paid all this off, but I was in a good place. I was renting a small apartment in not far from the treatment center, and I could afford all that. My credit was still horrible from my gambling years. It stays on for about 7 years, so I still had 4 more years of horrible credit at least. So I didn't have the ability to really move, but I was okay. So the owner of the company, that the residential facility that I was at, is a very good friend, and he had suggested that I move to South Carolina to work with the treatment center we had opened up there. The gentleman that was running the facility, he was not really enjoying it, wasn't doing very good at it, and needed to make additional money. So I politely declined, and Rick is my dear friend and owner of the company at the time, and he said, "Well, Joel, I need you to meditate about it, pray about it. I really feel this is a good move for you." And I said, "Rick, I don't want to go to South Carolina for many reasons. We haven't made money the last 3 years I was here. I can't imagine us making much money when a guy up there is leaving because he's not making money."
And you were basically absolutely doing the same thing where you were.
I was ready to get away from that. So to make a long story as short as possible, multiple times he asked me to consider going, and each time I said no, but I never really meditated or prayed about it. And when I do, I go to this bench in Florida. I talk about this bench all the time. And if I have a major decision to make, I go there and I pray and meditate and see if an answer comes to me. Well, I wasn't going to even give the South Carolina concept the option of the bench. I didn't even want to consider it. So I just simply said on the way home from work one day, "God, if you want me to go to South Carolina, you let me know." And I sort of laughed. That way I would fulfill my obligation to Rick. I would tell him I wouldn't be going. I would be moving on to another job. The amazing part, Walt, the same day that I said that, I went home, and I was about 20 minutes from the apartment that I lived in. When I got there, this was still the days of the land-based lines. I didn't have a cell phone at the time. It was ringing. I got out of my car, and it was my landlord, the nicest man on the planet. His first name was Paul. And he said, "Joel, I have some bad news." He said, "We've sold all of our properties, and you're going to have to leave." And I said, "Paul, I completely understand, and I wasn't upset because I believed that I was going to have probably a month or two to get some money together and move out." He quickly said, "Joel, the realtor that we took the deal to bought it immediately, and you have to be out by the end of the month." Well,
how long was the end of the month for you? 16 days.
So half a month. I had no money. I had no credit. I was placed in a position, and it took me about 10 minutes to understand, even remembering saying, "God, do you want me to go to South Carolina? You let me know." Well, the moment that happened, Walt, I said, oh my God, I cannot believe that I have come so far, and now I'm going to be uprooted from Central Florida. At that time, I lived right by the beach. I've lived there my entire life, that general area my entire life. And all of a sudden, I'm going to be uprooted and sent to South Carolina against my will. I was furious. This wasn't my plan. My plan was to get a job in Florida, move out, no longer do gambling treatment or addiction treatment at all. And I was just very frustrated. Ends up, I had to tell Rick that South Carolina was my only option and I would agree to go. My plan was to only go for 6 months. And I went with a horrible attitude. I would love to tell you I went with a great attitude, but it was not. I was planning on leaving as quickly as I could get some money together. And as you know, as we have talked over the last couple of years, South Carolina ended up being the greatest turning point in my life. I financially turned things around. The treatment center became very successful. I ended up getting pardons and my record expunged. I was able to adopt children. I really became, my life turned around. And ironically, South Wow. Carolina is now one of my favorite places on the planet. And if I had the option to live anywhere right now, that would be in the top one or two. And I have many dear friends there. So I consider my time in South Carolina one of the greatest periods of my life. And that was brought about through adversity that I never would have considered going to South Carolina, period. I was sort of forced through adversity to South Carolina.
And how ironic that when you were in Florida, the last place you wanted to
Absolutely.
Go to was South
and
Carolina.
And that was, in my mind at the time, it wasn't anything that I could imagine me living in. And it turns out the actual people of South Carolina are amazing. I think they get a really bad rap in a lot of ways. And I have lifelong friendships that I developed while I was in South Carolina. In fact, funny that many people in South Carolina believe I was born in South Carolina. I'm such entwined with that community that a lot of people really believe that I am from there.
That is funny. And of course, you didn't actually stay in South Carolina either. Through other twists and turns, you moved further north than that. You really got away from Florida completely, except for your periodic trips back to the bench. And oh, by the way, a little plug for Joel. If you're interested in his book, it's well worth it. You can find it at Amazon. It's called The Bench by Joel Elston. Check it out. But Florida was a big part of your life, and it is to the extent that you go back to visit the bench, but other than that, it really isn't.
My family is still there, and I enjoy visiting them. But as far as where I feel home is, South Carolina has become home. And the bench being a turning point, in fact, a week or two ago, I was there and sat on my bench and really enjoyed I really didn't have a question this time. I just enjoyed being there, being grateful for the incredible things that are going on in my life. And I flew into town and flew out of town, and I was glad to get there, and I was glad to get out. So it has become – it's amazing how I was so determined on one course of action years ago of only staying in Florida. And it turns out that if that would have happened – the greatest things that have happened in my life never would have come my way.
So I have to ask, and maybe this is a bit of a leading question, but why do you think it is, first of all, that when we run into adversity, we have a tendency to run into adversity over and over again? And second of all, why is it that adversity is so hard for us to predict where it is we actually want to get to? I mean, one of the very tenets of the law of attraction, of course, our show here is about the law of attraction. One of the tenets is that you want to be focusing on what you want and not what you don't want, and that's what leads you to get to what you want. Well, it's almost like the story you tell suggests that it's the opposite. By focusing on all this adversity, all of a sudden you get
to
the good place.
Well, it seems to me, and that would sound like the story on the top end, I believe because of the law of attraction and my mind getting in a correct place, I ended up it wasn't the place that made everything happen. It was my mindset that made everything happen. If the random state would have been North Carolina or New Jersey, and my mindset would have been right, I believe a positive chain of events would have happened at that point. It is a concept that I have to still work, get my grasp around working on, of like, how did this happen when, in fact, I was probably attracting the opposite, but the reality was I didn't even know what I was attracting. My mindset was all over the place. I knew what I didn't want, but I didn't know what I did want. And that was the place that I think a lot of people get stuck in. When you know what you don't want, you almost, in almost all the time, invite that into your life. I don't want to be sick. I don't want to be at cancer. I don't want to lose my job. When you get scared and in that chasing point, that's what you invite. The first night in jail, my perspective, for whatever reason, and I had only began at that point to slightly understand the law of attraction. But my first night in jail, when it seemed to be a new beginning instead of an end, I was able to see how my mind was in control of that. I could either be wallowing in, I'm in jail, my life's over, or, wow, I'm finally done with that bad chapter, and now it's time to turn the page and see what the world has for us.
So when you went to South Carolina, like you said, you had to admit that you didn't go there in a good mindset. You were in a very negative mindset. So how do you explain the fact that there was this big turnaround that turned South Carolina into this wonderful lifetime?
And I believe that happened when and I will say the first couple of weeks, and maybe the first couple of months, I described everything as gray. I was miserable. I just wasn't trying to make it work. For many people, they have their go-to way of coping with things. Mine has always been exercise. I love to lift weights. I'm a competitive power lifter. And I started working out. And when I started working out, that automatically improved my mood. I started to actually meet people. I developed a core group of friends slowly through the gym, and that expanded outside of the gym. And I started to see, instead of it being gray, I started to realize I'm living in a nice little town in South Carolina, just south of Charlotte. Charlotte is one of the most beautiful cities in the country, if you've ever been. And it is, mm-hmm. I started to wake up and see what I had around me instead of what wasn't around me. Yes, I wasn't at the beach, but I'm in a beautiful area. The traffic in the area is not near as bad as the Tampa Bay area. I can really start to feel that, wow, I'm a productive human being. And as silly as this may sound, Walt, there's a big difference in attitude toward my criminal conviction as well. When I was in Florida, a convicted felon is not allowed to vote until he gets a waiver from the state where your rights are restored. Well, in South Carolina, once a convicted felon is off probation, they are not barred from voting any longer. So it sounds like a really tiny difference, but I was able to vote. I started to feel not like I was an outcast as much. And so my perspective of what I was able to do, and I'd never voted too much before I lost the right to vote. And I never have missed an election since I've gotten it back because you appreciate that. I didn't have a gun permit. Before that, I've gotten my right to own a weapon back, and I have a gun permit, not that I carry all the time. But it's almost like when you lose the right, you go seek it back. And I started an appreciation, and that's when the law of attraction started to appreciate South Carolina. I started to appreciate what I was having. I appreciated that our business was being successful. And as that appreciation developed, that brought more things in to be appreciative of. And that began the snowball effect of, I went to volunteer at a place that worked with special needs children and foster care kids. And I knew, I didn't believe because of my criminal record that I'd ever be able to be a foster parent, but I thought I could do some training. Well, again, a long story short, I ended up being a foster parent and ended up adopting my kids. Those were events that I never could have imagined taking place. And it really just sort of reinforced my new belief system. And then somewhere in this period is when I really started, is the first time that I read the book, The Secret. And even though I was probably 50% on board with what The Secret was talking about, I started to think, wow, I can see where my negative thinking in the past has continued to bring me negative results. My positive thinking certainly has got me in a much better place. So I could see the benefits of it by looking at what I appreciate. So South Carolina, the pivot in South Carolina became when I woke up and realized what I had there versus what I didn't have there. And I focused on what I had there.
It's fascinating how in life we run into these pivot points, as you describe them, where things have been going badly, and for whatever reason, we're able to see things in a new light, and that new light is a positive one, and how that eventually leads to something really good. It happens over and over again. We don't really tend to notice it, especially when it's happening. The last thing we're thinking about when it's happening is, oh, geez, I wonder what the overall gestalt effect is of the law of attraction.
Absolutely not.
No, that's no. Not what we're thinking about. But nevertheless, that ultimately is what plays out. Whereas when we're thinking about it, this is the really ironic part. When we're thinking about the law of attraction or positive thinking, and it's not getting us to where we want to get as soon or as quickly as we would like it to happen, we actually create the most doubt for ourselves in those situations rather than just, you know, living in that moment and dealing with it and climbing our way out. And that's one of those ironic, I don't know what to call it. It's a paradox, I guess, that seems to dominate people's lives.
Well, I will say, when I was unintentionally using the law of attraction, when I didn't realize the concept hadn't been explained to me, but I did start instinctively focusing on the positives in my life, I really felt the most progress in my life at that point, because I wasn't overthinking it. I didn't necessarily know what I was doing. It was, wow, I'm starting to absorb all this great stuff, and it seems to be bringing more great stuff. I'm on a roll. I remember telling my mom on the phone probably about 8 or 9 months. She goes, son, you sound better than you have in years. And I said, Mom, I'm very happy here. I'm on a roll, I said. Everything seems to be going the right way. And, of course, my mom was quick to caution me. Well, don't be overconfident. Things are, you know, I'm like, well, thanks, Mom. I appreciate that.
But what exactly does that mean anyway, overconfident?
I've
never
know.
Figured that
it,
one
it
out.
It comes from the old school, the concept that knock on wood so we don't have bad luck. You know, it's almost like you can't talk about having good fortune. Because somehow that will curse the good fortune and bring bad fortune.
And of course, interestingly enough, the people who focus on that are the ones who end up getting themselves on the negative track, and in so doing,
that
bring themselves
exactly
the bad fortune.
Exactly how I see it. And so during this South Carolina period of time where my adversity had sort of propelled me, I could see how my mindset gained momentum in the positive realm. And as that took place, I just see this amazing transformation to my inner belief that I was a worthless, no good piece of scum, convicted felon, to a productive member of society. I was a well-respected addictions counselor. And this change took place in a very short period of time. And the reality was I was only what I believed I was. And that in South Carolina had, they didn't know who I was. They could only go by who I said I was. And once I started the dialogue of here's who I am, I became that person. I became very respected in the foster care community. I became a strong advocate for child adoption, helped find many kids homes in South Carolina. That was the person who I really started to believe I was and eventually became. It wasn't the other person, and that's the change that takes place. The past only has as much power over it as you allow it. And by changing the past or changing your view of the past, and if you look where adversity pushes us forward, you accept where we're at and not falling into, once again, if there were not adversity, Walt, we wouldn't have what we have today. Our country is built on people overcoming adversity. You know, the idea that Bill Gates' first version of Microsoft Windows certainly wasn't, if he would have quit after version one, we never would have had it. I forget how many, but he had multiple versions before it ever made it to the market. Tons. Yeah.
Three and a half, actually.
But they say that even before that, even the planning stages, he had a really hard time of making it stable.
Horrendous, Windows 1 was horrendous. It was absolutely terrible. I mean, you couldn't even do anything. It literally would not stay up. It was very unstable.
And he, you know, he could have given up on that. I'm glad he didn't. It started a whole new wave of thinking. A lot of stuff takes place over people having a need. If I may have told the story recently about the accountant in Charlotte that lost his job during the economic downturn in the late 2007, around there, and he was in really bad shape, and he only could imagine being an accountant. He spent his whole life being an accountant. He was not able to make any money in any other realm in his mind. As his unemployment ran out, he quickly realized he probably had about 6 months worth of money to live on, and he would be done. We were talking, and he said, "Joel, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm desperate." And he said, "I've been suicidal. I'm going to lose everything." And I said, "You're thinking too narrowly. You're only thinking about being an accountant." He goes, "That's all I am, is an accountant." So when I was over at his house one afternoon, we just happened to be talking. As he said, "Would you mind running to take the trash to the convenience center in South Carolina area?" A lot of the outlying areas have convenience centers or dumps, as we call them, and they don't have daily garbage or weekly garbage service. You just drive your own garbage to the convenience center. So he said, "Ride with me to the convenience center." And along the way, he stopped and he picked up four or five people's garbage on the way. And I said, "Well, in the meantime, until you get a job," I said, "would these people pay $25 a month to have you take their garbage?" And he goes, "Sure, I'm sure they would." And I said, "Well, are there other people in the area that don't have garbage service?" And he said, "There's hundreds of people in the area." I'm sure.
You can see where this is going.
He had 117 people that he was picking up garbage for at $25 a month. Well, now he had his attention, and he started thinking, "Wow, if I expand this," so the city of Rock Hill. That's in South Carolina. The city of Rock Hill happened to have an auction, and they had an old garbage truck they were auctioning off, and it was very, very cheap, and it needed a new hydraulic system that was going to be about $10,000. So I think he got it for $2,500, plus he had to put $10,000 in the hydraulic system. He started with one truck. Fast forward several years, he has one of the largest independently owned waste disposal companies in the Southeast United States. He's actually, wow. I don't know if I can say that, but there's a company that's looking to possibly buy him out, last I heard.
I have to ask, this is a dumb question, but does he do his own accounting?
Not anymore.
Not anymore.
And he called me I think it was the anniversary of my son's death, actually, where he called me and we were talking. He said, "Joel," he said, "I'll never forget us sitting in the driveway and me thinking everything's over." He said, "It just began. That was the beginning." He said, "Thank God that I lost my job as an accountant." He said, "I'll make more in a year than I would make 10 years when I was an accountant this year." And he said, "Beyond that, I'm employing people." And what he did was he makes a point to hire people who may not be able to get jobs, former felons. He makes a point to incorporate and help people get jobs who have traditionally been hard to employ. And he's finding very loyal employees. He pays quite a bit more than minimum wage. He pays more than other waste disposal companies do. So he again, is making a very wise set of business choices on top of the fact that he realized that it was almost over for him.
I'd like to interrupt for a second there, because not only is that a great story, but you just touched on something there that business owners, especially small ones around the country, need to learn from. You said that he hired these people who, not to put too fine a point on it, would probably be described as the dregs of society. He hired these people. They became loyal employees because he paid them more than the going rate. In other words, he paid more than the competitors were paying. He wasn't trying to keep his cost low. He was driving his cost up.
Yes.
And that actually increased his business.
It
improved his business because he kept loyal employees. And there's nothing like having employees who stay with you because they don't have to constantly be retrained. You're not constantly dealing with strife and turmoil. You're dealing with people who are just driving the business forward. It's actually worthwhile to have those people on your payroll. And I really wanted to point that out because there are so many business owners who don't appreciate that.
You nailed really sort of the law of attraction on the business side of how this could be very effective in the using it in small business or any business per se. But Costco is a big company that thinks a lot along the same lines. Whereas this gentleman realized, look, I'm asking people to pick up other people's garbage and putting it in a truck and taking it, dumping it. He said, I'm not asking people to go, you know, work for Microsoft or some huge company. He said, I'm really asking people that are, this is pretty rough work, and it's going to be snowing, it's going to be raining, and we still have to take the garbage out. It's going to be 100 degrees, and the garbage doesn't smell good at 100 degrees, and we're asking them to do that. So his concept...
It's actually harder than being the post office guy, because they do it in all weather,
it smells bad, too.
So
what he, as he developed his business plan, he realized that there's a group of people... And a lot of them, they're not all felons that work for him, but there's a group of people that have, for either due to their own fault, they've run into some adversity, and they haven't been able to get jobs. They haven't been able to get viable jobs. So when the minimum wage was $7 an hour, he's paying people $10 an hour, and he's actually taught. He said that if one time he needed to fill a position, and it was one gentleman came in. He rode his bike 2 miles to the interview. He said, I got out of jail. I had a drug addiction. I've been in recovery for a year. I have to work. I need to work. And this other young man came in that really had a better resume, had a stronger work background. And he hired the felon because he told him, he said, I want to take a chance on you. And that gentleman is now sort of his second in command. And is the most loyal employee that you can imagine. He said, there is nothing that this guy misses. If somebody's messing up, he's on top of it. If not that this is the kind of business you can really steal from, but there's none of the stuff going on because this guy treats his company and my friend like family. It's like it's his own company because he was given a chance. He wasn't just given a chance saying, I'll give you a chance to pay you minimum wage. I'll give you a chance to pay you what everybody else I'm paying. That is never forgotten, Walt.
Yeah.
And when people understand that, one of the rants that I could easily get on, which I'm not going to do, is companies today and employees today are not loyal like they were years ago. Absolutely.
And there's a good reason for it.
Yes.
Well, there's a number of good reasons for it.
And the idea that both sides are, there's a whole lot going on behind that. So when you find loyalty, it's one of the most, to me, loyalty is such a positive side of the law of attraction as well. When you really start feeling loyal to people, that is a very positive emotion. And your company is stronger when you have 10 loyal employees and they're there on time. When this gentleman, their trucks leave at 7 a.m., and he's a stickler about time, he likes to tell his customers, I will be at your house at 7:10 and then 7:12. And they stick to that schedule, and his customers love him. If the trash can gets dumped over, they stop, they pick it up, they police the area, they don't leave the trash scattered everywhere. They take their job very seriously. They understand what they're doing, and they're all throughout the Southeast right now, and are very popular. In a sense, it's probably the best customer service of any waste disposal company I've ever heard of. And you can't imagine being in a position that you would say that about waste disposal, but it does make sense.
Well, about anything, really. I mean, my dad worked for 44 years for the same company. He worked at General Electric. Started when he was 18 up until retirement, 40 years. And never even thought about leaving the company during that time. Myself, my own career, I've changed jobs many times in my career. In almost every case, actually all cases now that I think about it, no, except for one. All cases except for one, I left the job on my own volition because either the employer I was working for was mistreating me, or because the employer I was working for was leading us in a direction that would mean that my job would be in danger, and indeed perhaps even the company would be in danger. The one exception that I can think of to that, it wasn't either of those cases. It's just that while it was a good environment to work in, it was also an environment where there was nowhere for me to go. There was no way for me to move ahead, and I had pretty much outgrown what I was doing. I had gotten to the point where I needed new challenges, and they just weren't there. What a contrast to my dad's experience, because my dad, every step of the way, he would get to a point, he would master a set of skills, a certain job, and the company would make something new available to him, something that would take him in a better, different direction where he could utilize his skills in a better way. That seems to have fallen by the wayside. And by the way, that's true of General Electric today, too. I mean, they are another company today where loyalty isn't what it used to be. And it's both directions. It starts at the top, and it goes right down to the bottom. And literally, there are a lot fewer people at that company, as with most other companies in America, that stay loyal to that company. Wouldn't it be something if the whole thing turned around and both companies and employees started viewing each other differently?
Well, it would be a huge change in productivity, of the way people view things. When I had when I was working for the company that I eventually stole from, and due to my gambling addiction, and I went to them, I'm the one that turned myself in. And I certainly, you know, I paid the price. I did jail time. I did my probation, and I paid full, complete restitution. But when I went to tell my supervisor that I had taken money to gamble, and I was in the middle of a horrible gambling addiction, and I'm not trying to, I certainly was wrong, so I'm not trying to excuse this, but previously before that, I had worked, you know, some 60, 70, 80-hour weeks bringing things up to par at the group homes. I was, you know, we our group home rating went way up. Our kids thrived. And if there would have been a moment of saying, okay, well, you obviously have a problem. Is there a way we could maybe look at some treatment, allow you to pay this back over a period of time? They would have salvaged a very valuable employee. That might sound arrogant. They would have possibly salvaged me as an employee. I would have been so loyal to them, which I was already, but I would have been incredibly loyal. And I would have, at that point, that would have been like, I can't believe they've just, I would probably still be working for them, you know, 20 years later. But that didn't happen. It was, okay, you screwed up. Give me your keys. We're letting you go, and we're eventually going to press charges. By no means do I want my audience to hear that I am making excuses or I'm miserable. Everything worked out perfectly for me.
No, but I think I can say they were idiots. I mean, they really were. I don't care how you slice that. That was the stupidest thing they could have done. Because here's a guy who's been doing all this good stuff for them. He makes a mistake. He admits it without them even knowing about what happened. He just says, hey, I've been doing this, and I want to fix this thing. And their reaction is to fire him. That is just
plain
stupidity.
Well, and how I've used that example, I have actually, since I've been in counseling and I work with gambling addicts, I've lost count, but at least 30 times I have gone to employers and did the exact same thing. Say, Mr. Jones here has been stealing from you. He has a gambling addiction. What I'm proposing is you allow him to go to treatment. I have at least 30 times salvaged people's jobs, and 29 out of the 30 times, I would say both the employee and the employer say it's the best move they've ever made.
For the people who always want to see the glass half empty, what happened the 30th time?
There is one time I do remember the guy stole from them again and ended up going to jail. This was someone who it was very disappointing for me because I went out on a limb for him, but at the same time, he has a severe gambling addiction. He was given the opportunity and he didn't take advantage of it, and he paid the consequence. But the good news is we had such safeguards in place that he probably it was less than $1,000 he got from them, and the second time, and it was the safeguards immediately picked up on it. And the agreement was if he fails to comply, if he steals again, the previous charges will be wrapped up into these charges. And he paid a pretty high price for everything that he did. But out of the others, the 29 all stayed with the company long term. Most of them are still there, as far as I know. And the companies didn't have to train somebody. Plus, they had an incredibly loyal person there. They would have most employee thefts never get paid back. My case was different. I paid mine back in full. But if you have an employee that's still there, Walt, you can take out $200 a month and make sure you get your money back.
Absolutely, yeah. Talk about making it easy to garnish wages. It's the simplest way to do it. You don't even have to go to the county sheriff.
The agreement is you're going to pay X number of dollars a month back. We'll take it out of your check, and it gets paid back. Everybody comes out better, and there's multiple cases of situations where you can become loyal, where companies have been loyal to employees, and that is what happens. Our world has changed greatly in many ways. You see it a lot in so many things. When you have, for example, marriage today, that people don't try to keep marriages like they used to try to keep marriages years ago. We had an argument, so let's get a divorce. So loyalty is a commodity in today's world that doesn't seem to be as plentiful as it was years ago.
And for a good reason, but it's a kind of commodity that can be won back. It is possible to get it back. It just means having to adjust the way we look at the people we deal with. I mean, 97% success rate. That's what you reported with these people who had stolen from their employers, and you helped them keep their jobs and got them to pay the money back and made them loyal employees. That's a very high success rate.
Well, on 97%. Top of that, you look at the cost of saving the company of first having to train another employee, hire another employee, train another employee, and most of these positions were, you know, higher end positions where it's really hard to find the right person. And in my case, they lost. This is what always got me. I was employee of the year in January, and I was arrested for stealing in August. It was, by all accounts, the Department of Social Services said this is the greatest turnaround they had ever seen in a group home. Our group home, when I took over, was in shambles. We were able to become accredited through the CARF accreditation process, which is a very difficult thing to do, and we had so much going on for us in such a positive way, and my mistake or my theft, and again, I'm not minimalizing that, it seems like all the great stuff you've done, I actually, and I never fought this because I emotionally wasn't ready at the time, I had 4 weeks of vacation built up that would have been a huge amount of money toward my restitution. I mean, it would have been a nice amount toward it. And when I talked to the my supervisor, I said, well, you could just take my vacation money and apply it to my restitution. He goes, you lost all that. I was like, oh, okay. So I didn't think I was in a position to defend myself, but, you know, look, in retrospect, I lost, you know, 4 weeks vacation. Again, that would have come very close to paying off what my entire restitution would have been.
And I know we keep hammering on this, but I've got to point out one more thing here. I wonder about what was going on in the lives of the people who decided to crack down so hard on you, despite this story that you told so well here. Because the story is quite a different story from the way they perceived it. They perceived it as this horrible betrayal that could never be forgiven, basically ignoring all of the contributions you'd made and ignoring the possibility that you could essentially be recovered, that you could actually become a productive member of the company again. Just throwing that out the window. It makes me wonder what was their mindset and what was going on in their lives, because I'm willing to bet that somewhere in there, there was something really negative going on that made them want to lash out. Like
it
that,
it that's is lashing out, and I can't speak to what was going on with them, but I can state a couple of facts at the time. That the director of the center, who was the one that was very, and he was very angry that I only had to do 30 days in jail as well. He wanted me to do a lot more. He had just recently settled a sexual harassment suit, which I found interesting. And by no means is this something, because it was actually devastating news for me to hear. But about 6 months after I left the company and I was living in the halfway house and getting back my life, I'd already been convicted. He died of a heart attack out of nowhere. And it was quite a shock. So he was not that old. So, and as I was doing research for my book, this is a very interesting point. I was trying to get the name of the company now, because I knew they had changed the name. And in doing research on Google, the company 4 or 5 years ago was shut down because they were stealing money from their clients.
Wow. Yeah, that's what I was expecting was going to be in the background. I'm surprised, pleasantly surprised, that you're actually able to tell that story to us, that part of the story. But it doesn't surprise me. I can't tell you how many times I've read in the news about, you know, a politician or an entertainer or, you know, some prominent person who comes down really hard on activity X, only to find that they are involved in activity X. It's an amazing thing
I don't know if you realize this, but one of the things that really brought about the whole Bill Cosby attention thing, he had come out very strongly on a couple of political issues. And it actually, a comedian made the comment. He said, why are we listening to a man that's been accused of rape? And that brought that one comedian saying that brought that all back to the forefront, and it's ended up, he's been charged with a crime now. And you see that a lot. I don't know how many times I don't know if you, this is very random, I don't know if you happen to see the Netflix show The Making of a Murder or something along those lines.
I'm aware of it, but I haven't seen it.
But long story short, the head prosecutor, which at least they portray him in the documentary as someone who's relatively devious, he seems so adamant about this guy. Well, you see at the end of the show, he's charged with soliciting this young lady for sex and using his power and position as a prosecutor to get sex from her. And I find that, again, he was in such a position of, when you put yourself in that position of judgment, or you put yourself in that position of taking a stance, you're often exposed on the other side. And I find that lack of humility, I think, is sort of the law of attraction at work in some ways. I do think it's sort of, it's a version of it.
Sure, yes. Yeah. It's basically, exactly. It's subversion is a good word. It's also inverting it on itself. The thing that I think is most useful, though, to our conversation about overcoming adversity is to recognize all the different ways that we put adversity on ourselves in the first place. These are rather dramatic examples that we're putting out here. But all of these leaders who crack down hard on somebody else are people who created their own adversity. And you gave some very clear details about how that adversity hit them smack in between the eyes later on. In fact, they actually killed one person through a heart attack. That's really important to know, because when you understand that you bring adversity upon yourself, then that's where you can first come to grips with the idea that it's up to you to turn around your mindset so that the adversity becomes your ally and you start working with yourself rather than against yourself. That's what happened to you in your jail.
That awakening, that's so well put, Walt. That awakening that I call the awakening, that understanding where adversity is the, I heard someone describe this as the waves of our life. The ocean has waves. It causes the currents. There's a point to the waves and the movement of the ocean. And he said, adversity is the waves that get things going in your life. It works hard. The adversity is a catalyst. When you can't make the changes you need to make in your life, adversity will come along and sort of fast forward changes for you.
Which is bizarre. I mean, that's not right. What we think of when we think of adversity. We think of it as something that's getting in the way, that's making our lives miserable, not actually helping to make our lives better.
Well,
that's bizarre. Also,
adversity, because the term adversity, we inherently think of adversity as being a bad thing. And it's sort of like I've come to the term with, when I use the word pain, immediately everyone says pain is bad. Pain is bad. No, pain is a part of it. It's a tool our body uses to let us know a part of our body is injured. Pain is neither good nor bad. It just is. Adversity comes across as always being a bad thing, but in reality, adversity is most often a catalyst for change. Most people.
And correct me if I'm wrong. You're not saying that we should stay
not.
In adversity.
I'm saying identify it as, wow. I know this sounds crazy. When you're in the middle of it, you can't do this. But as quickly as you can get to a place of doing it, saying, this was my pivot point. Adversity is a pivot point for me. I always look at that. It's a time to adjust. It's a time to change. And use it. Use the power of the adversity.
And when you use that power of the adversity, amazing things happen. That's what the whole story is about.
As you know, we could talk for hours about the multiple adverse moments of my life where things changed and they pivoted in another direction. But I feel it's such an incredible version of sort of adjusting our perspective. One of my clients recently, and I give him credit for this term, instead of the law of attraction, he calls it the law of perspective. And I love that way of thinking. And adversity is really the term. It's all about your perspective of it. I'm never suggesting that anyone stay in pain or stay in adversity. I'm just asking you sort of reframe what that means to you. It becomes a very healthy way to view it. As I know one client who's very well trained in the law of attraction. When adversity comes along, he yells, "Plot change." And he says, obviously something. I didn't anticipate this. However, it's clearly a plot change taking place in my life. Let's see where it goes.
That's a good way to say it. I like that because that's a good way to kind of shake it up and say, okay, I'm going to laugh at the situation. We're not going to get all bent out of shape about it. I'm going to find a way to look at it on the good side.
It's complete turnaround of way. It turns around the way we think of things. And I think on so many levels, Walt, we have to work hard on stepping back from automatically assuming adversity is a horrible thing, pain's a horrible thing. These are events that, used properly, when we get more astute in our understanding of the law of attraction, this can become a default way of thinking. I'm not seeking adversity, but when it comes, I don't freak out. When I lost my job at the treatment center I was running, I have gotten so adapted to the idea that adversity is not a bad thing for me. It's just a change. It didn't even faze me. It wasn't a big deal.
Well, while we could be talking about this for hours, obviously we've used this one up, so we'll have to save it for the next time. But let's keep talking about adversity, because I think it's a poignant topic that everybody can learn something from. And we'll see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody. It might seem-